Welcome to Ex Libris, the premier podcast where the latest scientific discoveries are discussed in the context of their apologetic significance to the Christian faith. This program is brought to you by the monthly partners of Reasons to Believe. For more information, please visit reasons.org/monthly partners.
This is Average Joe Aguirre in the library of Dr. Hugh Ross, astronomer, president of Reasons to Believe, and we are here today to discuss mystery radio bursts that have been traced to a distant galaxy. Now, Hugh, when we hear that term radio burst or fast radio burst, I think it needs explanation, and then we'll get into the implications.
Well, fast radio bursts have been a long-standing mystery in astronomy. They're very rapid. They may only last a few milliseconds, but they're incredibly bright. And so the fact that they're so bright, and they're also broadband, so it's not just one frequency. And so literally for decades, radio astronomers and others have been wanting to figure out what are these mysterious fast radio bursts.
They're fast, but I think they're pretty strong, right?
Yeah, they're strong.
That they give off enough energy to match the sun for 10,000 years or something like that?
Oh, no. They match in a few milliseconds, they pour out more energy than the sun pours out in a whole month.
Okay, a month. All right. Yeah. I was a little bit off on that.
But, yeah, it's still an incredibly bright thing. And the reason it's been a big mystery, we've not been able to find the source of these fast radio bursts. In fact, for a long time, people thought, well, maybe it's just radio interference from man-made satellites or instruments that are here on the Earth. But by looking at what's called the dispersion measure, they were able to determine, no, it has to be well outside our solar system. And the latest studies are showing it has to be well outside our galaxy. But I wrote a blog article on December 29th. Basically to dispel a speculation that these fast radio bursts were intelligent aliens broadcasting their presence throughout the universe. And there was people saying, well, maybe these dispersion measures aren't what we think they are, and what's really happening is these are intelligent aliens inside our galaxy broadcasting their presence. And the point is, you know, when we do broadcast, we tend to put out a strong signal in short bursts. So he said, this has got to be intelligent signals. However, now that we know that it really is broadband, because, you know, when we broadcast signals like TV or radio signals, we broadcast them in a narrow wavelength range at a high power because that's just the cheapest way to communicate. So you'd expect that if these really were signals from intelligent aliens, they would have discovered the principle of economy.
Right.
So the fact that we see broadband, and that's kind of the, you know, broadband radiation is what you expect from natural sources. But December 20th, what happened was a team of radio astronomers for the first time detected fast radio bursts coming from the one and only source that repeats. We see a lot of fast radio bursts, but basically you just see one burst and that's it. There's one object called fast radio bursts, or FRB-121-102, that actually repeats its bursts. And so it's been the focus of some significant studies by astronomers. And what got announced in the Astrophysical Journal, December 20th issue, was that they had seen these fast radio bursts with two different instruments, the Parkes Radio Telescope in Australia and the Green Bay Telescope in West Virginia.
Green Bank, pardon me,
yeah. These are two really large, like the one in Australia is 210 feet across. The one in West Virginia, Green Bank, is 300 feet. And they also were able to get observations from Arecibo. That's a 1,000-foot diameter telescope in Puerto Rico. Now, it's not fully steerable. It's just basically a huge dish built into the ground where they move the feed to get to different sources. But the fact that this was seen simultaneously by the Green Bank Telescope and the telescope in Puerto Rico enabled them to pinpoint the position with greater precision they'd ever had before. But then they tried to also find it with a very large array, which is a radio interferometer in New Mexico, and they had not been able to see anything. And likewise, they were looking for signals using infrared telescopes in space and X-ray telescopes, and they all came back negative. And so basically what happened in late December is they said, we've got a better fix on this thing that tells us it's definitely extragalactic. And as I wrote in my blog article, definitely not signals from an extraterrestrial intelligent civilization. This is a natural source. And based on the dispersion measures, probably something like 3 billion light years away, so really distant, which would make this a very bright and intense object. But we couldn't identify the galaxy in which it was existing. And basically the paper closed by saying, to do any better than this, we're going to need to have radio interferometry detections of the fast radio bursts, and we don't have them.
Right.
But what got announced today in the British journal Nature, a paper came out literally today making the point, actually it was a few hours ago yesterday, saying we've actually seen fast radio bursts, 9 of them, with a very large array in New Mexico. And that has a resolving power that's about 100 times better than what you can get with the telescope in Puerto Rico and the one in West Virginia.
Because of the nature of how they are lining up these instruments. Is that correct?
Well, what determines the resolving power of any telescope is the diameter over which you're collecting the light. And so with the telescope in Puerto Rico, it's 1,000 feet in diameter.
Impressive.
Which means that you can get a position measurement that's about 3 times better than what you can get with a 300-foot telescope in Green Bank. But what you have in New Mexico with a very large array are 27 separated telescopes. But the advantage in radio astronomy that you don't get in optical astronomy is that the atmosphere does not disturb the phase information. So you get both the phase information and the amplitude information of the incoming waves. And it's because of that that we can actually link these telescopes together and actually build the equivalent of a telescope that's the diameter of the distance of the farthest separated radio telescopes that are linked together as an interferometer. You know, in the case of the very large array, that base is many miles, many tens of miles across. And so they're able to get a resolving power that's 100 times better than anything they're able to get, more than 100 times better. In fact, they're able to pinpoint, for example, with the telescope in Arecibo, they were able to nail down the position of this object to about 1 minute of arc. Whereas with the very large array, they were able to pin it down to 1/10 of an arc second.
So and if so, I'm looking at the moon, for example, help me as a layperson.
Well, the moon is 0.5 degree across in the sky, which is 30 arc minutes.
All right.
And so an arc minute has 60 arc seconds.
Let's say I'm looking at a crater at the moon. What would that be?
Well, for example, the smallest thing you can see with a naked eye on the moon is Mare Crisium, which is about 2 arc minutes across. If you got really good eyesight, you can see that sea up near the top of the moon. But you're not going to be able to see craters. To see craters, you're going to need to have a pair of binoculars.
Right. But you're talking about the resolving power here with this interferometer.
Well, to give you an idea, the interferometer gives you a resolving power 600 times better than what you're able to get with the 1,000-foot diameter telescope.
Yeah.
So it's a factor of 600 improvement. And with that improvement, they are able to also detect a steady radio source. It was very faint, but they were able to pick it up with a very large array that was only, well, it was actually less than 1/10 arc minute away. And so the error bar was 1/10 of an arc minute. This steady, faint radio source they found was in the same position as the fast radio burst to within the measuring error, which was 1/10 of an arc second. Now, that's close enough where that means there's a high probability that this steady radio source is also the source of the fast radio bursts, that they're one and the same object.
All right. Extra galactic.
Right. And then they said, well, they still couldn't see the galaxy in which this thing was embedded in. So what they did is they got two very long baseline interferometers to try to get an even better position of the steady radio source. Now, a very long baseline array is where you got radio telescopes separated from one another across a continent or multiple continents. So, for example, the Europeans have established what they call the European Very Long Baseline Interferometer Network. And that involves a telescope in Sweden, one in Spain, one in England, one in Germany. And then they also link it up with one with the telescope in Puerto Rico. So they get a really...
Wow, you're going across continents.
Right. And instead of getting a tenth of an arc second, they're able to resolve down to about 1/1000th of an arc second using that very long. And the U.S. has one, too. National Radio Astronomy Observatory has got an array of 10 telescopes, radio telescopes, that stretch from Hawaii all the way to the Virgin Islands. And so both of these very long baseline interferometers were used to get a very precise position for the steady radio source. And that came in at 1.7 arc second accuracy, milli arc second. So that's 0.0017 arc seconds.
All right. So all of this accuracy is telling us
what that measurement tells us is that the source must be small. It can't be a whole galaxy. It can't even be a star cluster within that galaxy or a giant gas cloud in the galaxy. In fact, the biggest it could possibly be is about 25 light years across, and it might be a lot smaller than that. So this is important. They were able to show that this steady radio source is a very small object, small and bright, which led the researchers to three possible conclusions. Number one, that the fast radio burst source is the same source as what's responsible for the steady radio emission. They're one and the same objects. Possibility number two, they're two separated objects that are close together but completely independent, where one would, say, be an active galactic nucleus of a galaxy that's so small that they can't see it at that distance. And then there's a magnetar or a pulsar that's nearby. You say, what are those? Those are neutron stars that are rapidly spinning with powerful magnetic fields, and they're capable of exploding out very rapid bursts. So that's been a speculation for a long time as to what are these fast radio bursts, because, for example, we see a similar phenomena in the Crab Nebula pulsar. So I said, we just think this is an exotic neutron star that's pumping out these random flashes of a high-intensity, very short burst radio radiation. Speculation number three is that it's a magnetar or a pulsar that's influencing what's happening in a very nearby active galactic nucleus. However, what it's going to take to really nail it down would be for a very long baseline interferometer to actually detect the fast radio bursts.
Longer than what we have already?
No, I mean. Okay, the fast radio bursts have been seen with the Parkes telescope, with the Green Bank telescope, the telescope in Puerto Rico at Arecibo, and what's brand new is it's now been seen by the Very Large Array, but it's not yet been seen by the long baseline interferometers.
Which one is that now?
Well, the two very long baseline interferometer arrays were used to measure the position of the steady radio source. But it's still not decided whether that steady radio source is also the source of the fast radio bursts.
Oh.
To make that determination, you're going to want to detect the fast radio bursts with one of these or both of these very long baseline interferometer arrays. So that's how the paper closes. the January 5th paper, the one that came out yesterday, basically said that's what we need to do to really nail down what it is. On the other hand, this is a big breakthrough. We now know it's not inside our galaxy. We now know it's not signals from an intelligent civilization. We know it's some kind of exotic pulsar or magnetar existing in a distant region. And everybody expected that we'd be able to see the host galaxy. So that's kind of the remaining mystery. Why can't we see the host galaxy? And so it's either something really small, or maybe this is a magnetar and a pulsar that got kicked out of a galaxy. That's a possibility. But then you got the problem, then why would you have this steady radio source so nearby? Or maybe it's a small galaxy that basically got disrupted, and all that remains is this supermassive black hole. That's what an active galactic nucleus is. It's a supermassive black hole that's accreting a lot of gas.
Right.
And so maybe that's what we're dealing with, is some supermassive black hole that somehow wound up losing its galaxy or being ejected from its galaxy. And then right nearby, you got one of these magnetars or pulsars.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Hugh, what I hear you saying then is that this is a natural source. The radio signals are coming, emanating from a natural source.
Yeah, the bottom line in terms of apologetics, Joe, is that people have been speculating this is E.T. phoning home.
Right.
Or E.T. trying to communicate with us. Or what you see in the scientific literature, that's what's been happening on the web, what you see in the scientific literature is people saying these sources are so strange, it must be exotic physics. We're discovering new laws of physics, and maybe this is going to overturn everything we know about particle physics and cosmology. And the bottom line is that's not what's happening here. These are things that can be well explained by objects that we're already quite familiar with. And so everything's fine with the universe. Everything's fine with all the cosmological evidence that shows the existence of the God of the Bible. We Christians can rest assured that fast radio bursts are not going to destroy our faith.
Now, Hugh, those of us who have seen the you know, it's a nice, entertaining movie when it came out, I don't know, back in 1982 or whenever it was, and younger people, I'm sure, have seen it by now. And there have been other movies like it. What would you expect as an astronomer if such communication was possible? What would that look like coming from within our galaxy? How would those kinds of signals manifest themselves? What can an astronomer look for? Would it be a fast radio burst? Would it be something else? How can
we detect
those?
Well, that's
what
drove the speculation about fast radio bursts, because it's a little bit like the signals we send out. I mean, for example, when you broadcast a TV program, it comes out as short bursts of radio wavelength broadcasts. On the other hand, it's always narrow band. What we're seeing here is something that's broadband. So, and moreover, we can't see any information in the signal. It's, you know, just basically random stuff.
It's not going to be Morse code or something like that.
And it's nothing like that. Moreover, we see similar signals coming out of the Crab Nebula pulsar. So it's like we already see objects that produce these kinds of signals. And you know, neutron stars are common in the universe. I think what surprised everybody is how strong these signals are and how common these signals are. But given that the universe is filled with neutron stars and we're looking out at those great distances and those neutron stars are being fed, and maybe that's what's going to be coming out of this, that we're looking at magnetars and pulsars that somehow are being fed by active galactic nuclei. That might be the explanation.
Hugh, would people like Seth Shostak and people at the SETI Institute agree with you? Are they... looking for something other than these kinds of signals when
it
comes
people
to...
people like Seth Shostak, and incidentally, Seth was the graduate, one of Dave Rogstad's graduate students.
Yes.
So he's got a connection here with reasons to believe. But astronomers who are looking for extraterrestrial intelligence signals have been quick to say this is not it. It's the web articles that have been pumping all the speculation that this is ET calling home or aliens trying to contact us or they're broadcasting. But the SETI Institute has been very quick to say it's not these fast radio bursts.
Okay. So
mainly because of what these papers have been publishing.
So they're not the least bit cheerful about this kind of thing as well. They agree with you. Not that you've gone on their site and checked, but this is not a candidate for any kind of communication.
It took these two papers to silence that speculation.
Okay.
There were astronomers outside of the SETI Institute that were very vocal in saying these are signals from intelligent aliens. This has been going on since 2014. But again, they're not part of the SETI Institute, but they've been very vocal. They've been publishing papers. But these two papers, as I wrote in my blog article on December 29th, basically silence that speculation that these are signals being sent out by ET, mainly because they're able to prove that these are signals that we're getting from way outside our galaxy. And given the broadband nature of the signals, because the people are saying that it was signals from aliens, they were trying to say it's not broadband at all. What's happening is that aliens are sending out signals at different frequencies at different times. So they're sending out narrowband signals that look like a broadband signal. And that's what you'd expect if the signal came from inside of our galaxy. But thanks to the fact that we're now seeing these signals with multiple radio telescopes, basically tells us, yes, they really are from way outside our galaxy. Therefore, their broadband and the broadband nature very much simulates what we already see in objects like the Crab Pulsar. So thanks to these two very recently published papers, speculation that this is ET calling home has been put to rest. It's also been putting to rest speculation that we're seeing new laws of physics that are going to overturn everything we know in cosmology and particle physics. That's also been put to rest. And I think that's where we who are Christians can be comforted, is that all the scientific evidence that shows us that there's a God of the Bible that's responsible for creating all these particles and for creating and designing the universe, that stands.
Excellent.
So,
great. Thank you for those comments. We appreciate that.
And I got an article coming out January 9th. Where I give a new update as to what's happening with fast radio bursts. So people can check my blog and see what's going on there. And also, they can be looking forward to Chuck Horst writing some articles on fast radio bursts. He's a visiting scholar at Reasons to Believe. He's been here twice with us. And that's his specialty, his fast radio bursts. He's an astronomer, and that's kind of what he's devoted his astronomical research life to. So we have actually have an expert within our midst who's going to be giving our lay people here some insights into why these objects are so important.
Indeed. All right. You can look for that here at reasons.org. Thank you for your ongoing support. It allows us to bring you up to speed on the latest scientific discoveries and their apologetic value. For Hugh Ross, this is Joe Aguirre. Until next time, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at RTV Official.
We'd like to thank our monthly partners for making this broadcast possible. If you're not a monthly partner or would like information about becoming one, please go to reasons.org/monthly partners. Also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, where you can join the conversation about the latest scientific discoveries, headlines, and their apologetic value.